Hi, I'm Marcus.
And I'm Nick.
And we are Working Class Nerds.
Where the podcast gives you no information about your favorite information.
Today is Thursday, March 22nd, 2018. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Buzzsprout. I guess I should really get us on other hosting servers. Enough talk, more action.
This week, we have Dr. Svotor as our guest. He will be discussing how he came to be known as Dr. Svotor, as well as breaking down his unique perspective as a longtime gamer and mental health professional. So, Doc, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, thanks for having me on, Nick. Thanks, Marcus.
I'm glad you could come on.
Oh, yeah. I had a lot of fun. A couple weeks ago, I was at work. I was grading papers. I'm a professor now, and So we're doing this the Star Wars order. That's episode 4 of my story. Anyway, so I was grading and I decided I'm going to listen to these guys. So I started and I listened to about 6 episodes straight or 4 one day and 2 the next. And I had a lot of fun and I was sort of taking mental notes of things that I am really passionate about that I would love to talk with you guys about someday. And so now we're here.
Excellent.
I'm happy you're here. So not only do we get to hang out on Sunday nights, now you're on the podcast.
Yeah. I was wondering where all those extra listens came from. It must have been you.
Yeah. I had to listen repetitively so that I could get my thoughts straight. So yeah, so Sunday nights, I've been a healer in Marcus's Death Star Troopers group in Star Wars The Old Republic since second week of December. I filled in a couple times and decided that, you know, there's some potential here. We were beating Nehut, which is the third boss in the most recent operation. Gods from the Machine. And we actually took him down. I don't know if I was probably part of the first group where Marcus achieved success there. And I just decided to stick with the group.
I don't think you were the first one, but I think between the Sunday night team, because it's my own, and the Wednesday night team that I run with, those two meant the most. I did it. I was like the ninth inning bullpen pitcher that comes out. They called me in just to beat that boss because they, this the Monday night team, Dent's team, they 7-manned the first 2 bosses, and then they just needed the 8th to get Nahut down.
But that is a good way. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
That's a great way to describe what marauders are in the Old Republic. They can't pitch the whole game, but they can come in and hit things at the end.
Wow. Everybody abuses me for this.
So as you know, I don't play Svotor, but Marcus does obviously a lot. But he always says everyone shits on him for being a marauder, and this is just further evidence. It's like it's really nice to see somebody else besides me shitting on Marcus once in a while.
All the time.
I actually really love marauders. I just think that if I'm going to talk in a public forum like this, I have to show that I'm in tune with the zeitgeist against marauders.
Fair enough. Yeah. So besides Svotor, do you play any other games frequently?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I did. And I try to stay in tune with a couple different franchises. So I have a PS4 and I have Battlefront 2. Mm-hmm. And I have not played it. They had a major update this week or recently where they changed the progression system, which definitely was needed. But I don't have the free time to be able to beat all the people who have free time in that game.
Right.
And I'm really not a shooter. Like, just talk to me the rest of this hour and you'll be like, he must play MMOs. Like, very... I'm just not... The maybe if I was on a computer, I could point and shoot a little better, but the thumbsticks, I can't hit anything. I can get the drop on you, and the amount of time it takes for me to like shoot your ankle, you're just going to shoot my face off.
Right.
So, I like the Final Fantasy series a lot. I loved Final Fantasy 15. If I was closer to 16 years old, I probably would have tried to platinum trophy that game. But as a professor and a professional counselor and doing a lot of other things that are more academic task oriented, I just beat the main story and I really loved it. You know, there's other franchises I like My son is 9, so we really connect on Pokemon and Smash Brothers and Mario Kart and all of that kind of thing.
Mario Kart is so much fun. Yeah. Watch out for the blue shell.
Oh, the blue shell of death. There's always someone who gets really mad at the end of Mario Kart. It usually has to do with the blue shell.
Well, I don't even know if they still have the blue shell in it, but
they do.
They do.
Yeah.
I haven't played Mario Kart since 64.
Wow. Yeah, I love Pokemon. Freshman, sophomore year of college, I'd go back and replay Yellow or Blue or Silver versions when I'd find my Game Boy in the closet or something. I can't really get into the new ones because of all the new Pokemon. It's not quite the same when I don't know all of them, you know? But
yeah. And also Persona. I really liked Persona 5, which came out about a year ago, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's a JRPG.
Yep. And Persona 4 is also right up there. Both of those even, I think I would put in my top 10 games of all time in my personal list. I love the symbolism and in that franchise and how I like when you're in the same world. Final Fantasy does this too, but the characters are not the same. So it's not a sequel. It's a continuation of the spirit of the
game.
Yeah.
In the same universe, sort of.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Sort of like going from Return of the Jedi to the Phantom Menace.
Yeah, I get you. Or kind of like how the... Well, I don't think it's probably not quite as smooth of a transition going into Star Wars universe.
Yeah, if you had five listeners, I just caused them to tune out. I said something about it. Oh, by the way, midichlorians. So as a social scientist, I just think that if society hasn't been torn down by a maniacal Sith Lord and you still have doctor's offices, it makes sense that you would find a way to measure your force potential with science. I think that there's definitely still room for the spiritual aspects of things, even if you measure things scientifically. So there we go. Back to the podcast.
All right.
That's a good point.
I'm sorry. My first question is, are you going to get Final Fantasy 15 on the PC?
No, I only play one game on the PC, Marcus.
That's it?
The same one game that you play.
Yep.
Well, I'll get into... I've actually started playing another game. So my quick question is, why do people play games? That's what I want to ask, because I just saw your notes.
Yeah.
And I want you to answer that.
Well, there's a lot of different motivations for why people play games. And I've written so many pages on this in my life that I have to ask you, do we have time for that answer right now? Do we want to go there?
Well, maybe a quick summary. Could you do an abridged version?
Sure. There's lots of motivations for why people play video games. And so a lot of my dissertation research is specifically on MMORPGs. Mm-hmm. And so back then, Destiny was new, but there certainly were not any scholarly research articles about Destiny, which is like a FPS MMO. So it's its own genre. So with traditional genres, we have people who want to achieve things and they want to beat the game. They want to win. They want to defeat other people. Like if you have a PvP orientation and you just like to see your status rise, like leaderboards. So those are all the different kinds of achievement people. Then there's people who play for social reasons. And these are games that are connected using online services. And people also, it might not be just social interaction. It could be team building. They like having a role in a place within their social construct. And then other people just like to escape from some of their stress and relax. Maybe do it for the same reason people might exercise on their way home from work, stop at the gym. Other people might, you know, get their dinner ready, go sit down in the living room and turn on their game and play for 90 minutes or even longer. So it really comes down to who the person is and, you know, what their needs are and how does this game fit into that cycle of, you know, doing what you need to do and doing what you want to do.
Right. All right. Well, there it is. Yep. So what games are you playing right now?
Just Star Wars The Old Republic, and then I'm playing the constant game of grading all my students' assignments on time.
How many students do you have to grade?
A lot.
Like 500?
No, not quite that.
All right.
But it's a big number. And, you know, I had an interesting story recently. I had a student talking about how they had to get an assignment done by midnight. And it was 10 in the morning when I was teaching them. And I just listened and I started smiling. This other students in the conversation saw me kind of snickering. And I was like, listen, this is the circle of life. You're all stressed out because you have to give this paper to me. Then I'm going to be stressed out because I have to give it back to you marked up. And it's not just you. It's all... you know,
200
of you. Right. and so, you know, it might take you 6 hours to do this paper, but if it takes me 15 minutes to grade your paper, multiply that by the number of you. So, you know, that's sort of the game that I'm always playing. And then Star Wars, The Old Republic just kind of fills in the empty spaces.
Well, it fills up all of my spaces when I'm not working.
I don't know. I've asked for people to fill my group a couple times this week, Marcus. You didn't do it.
Well, you're going to find out why in a few minutes, but it's a definite off few weeks for me just because of the big changes that are happening in my life.
Okay.
So, okay. Nick, what have you been up to for the last couple of weeks?
Well, generally things are good. I'm just, you know, continuing to work and take classes at UConn.
Huskies.
right. So the Saturday after we recorded our last episode, Marcus is moving into his new shop, which he talked about. So it was a chilly, you know, New England morning. My dad and I were going over to help him. And as per usual, we are running late because we grabbed coffee. So I had it.
But that's an acceptable late. You're not late if you're getting coffee.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we were like 10 minutes late or whatever. So we were changing cars into another vehicle so that we can move the tools more easily. So, I'm kind of jogging over to the passenger side in Marcus's driveway of the other car. And as I round the front end of the car, I'm jogging. And then the next thing I realize, I'm sprawled out on the driveway and my coffee has exploded all over the driveway. Ice cubes skittering across the ice that was under my feet. And I'm just completely in starfish position. Meanwhile, Marcus and someone else helping us move, Scott, is
my employee.
His employee. Well, I don't know how detailed you wanted to get.
That's fine.
Number one employee. Marcus and Scott are sitting in the van just laughing their asses off at me, sprawled out on the ground. And my dad had run back to our car to go get a jacket or something. I don't know what he was getting. And was literally within arm's distance of me when I fell and had absolutely no clue. Just kept running right down the sidewalk.
No, he didn't care. He was happy to see you fall.
It was completely cartoonish the way I fell. Feet over my head, the whole deal. Coffee everywhere.
Ass over tea kettle?
Yeah, ass over tea kettle. Exactly. I ended up developing what's apparently called ochronon bursitis. Basically, there's like a Marcus is shaking his head. There's like some connective tissue on the pointy part of your elbow, and it got like the size of a golf ball. But now I'm fine.
You know what I call that? Suck it up.
Right. So obviously, I was the fodder of all the jokes every time we saw a piece of ice for the rest of the day.
But, rest of the day, we were just moving the tools again on Tuesday, and we were making fun of you, telling you to watch out for the ice.
Right. So I probably won't live that down for a while. But in video game news, I started playing Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus. It's great. I played the first game. I love the first game. I played all the DLC for it. This was just as great, if not better. It's the whole premise of the game is just awesome. Just endlessly killing evil Nazis in varying ways is great. I also really like the atmosphere. My favorite game series of all time is, you know, the Fallout series, with New Vegas being my number one game of all time. And this game shares a similarly dystopian future type of atmosphere. And in a way, they're both post-apocalyptic. In Fallout, you know, it's after a nuclear holocaust, so to speak. And then in Wolfenstein, the Nazis have taken over the world. So that's a bit of an apocalypse, too.
Have you seen the show The Man in the High Castle?
No.
So it's Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically Wolfenstein, well, less blood, but it's basically the Nazis win the war.
Oh, yeah.
And it's set in America where, I want to say, like, Colorado West is all Japanese controlled.
in Colorado East is all German Nazi controlled.
That sounds really cool.
It's an awesome show. I've watched the first season, and my wife isn't into it, so every time we're watching it on the couch, she just falls asleep, so I just give up.
Yeah,
that's and I go play Star Wars.
But, yeah, that sounds fascinating, because I was just going to say, in Wolfenstein, it really, a particular part of the game where you're walking through an American town that's all Nazi-ified, and it's all, you know, just swastika flags everywhere and stuff, and there's a parade, and you could sort of, if you take the swastika, you know, flags off and put American flags in, it would be typical 1960s small town. But it's just really weird to see that juxtaposition between the Nazi flag and the American flag, and how it just twists in from something so, like, prideful that it's like, oh, yeah, of course, America, this is great, into, like, something so fucked up, you know what I mean? And how, like, people are trying to go about their normal lives, but it's just really weird, and, like, it's like a tug-of-war back and forth in your brain, because, like, it's so familiar and so, like, fucked up at the same time. It makes a cool setting to play a game in.
I understand that.
You know?
Does it mess with your head?
Yeah, definitely. But then you get to kill the Nazis, so it's a lot better.
The parade lasts 30 seconds.
Right. Beyond Wolfenstein, I'm going to be starting a new game this weekend.
What?
Which is also always pretty sweet. I'm trying to get Marcus to start playing it, but he's a little skeptical. It's tough to pry him away from SWTOR. It's a co-op-only game called A Way Out, where you play as two inmates trying to break out of prison. Me and one of my buddies from the UConn paintball team, Al, shout out to Al, will be jamming on it all day Saturday. So I'll be sure to report back in on how that goes. But it looks really cool. It's only co-op, so you can either play couch co-op or online co-op, and you have to work together. And I'm sure, Doc, you might like it as well, because it changes depending on what choices you make in the game, which is pretty cool. That's why I was drawn into it.
But, yeah, that's one of my favorite things about video games, and also one of my favorite things about philosophy in life is alternate realities. So that whole what if scenario is really fascinating. Yeah.
The butterfly effect and things of that nature.
I love the butterfly effect. I think that's Ashton Kutcher's best contribution to the world.
There's an interesting game centered around the butterfly effect. It was a horror game. I can't remember the name of it, but you're centered at, like...
Until Dawn.
Until Dawn, yes, thank you. Yeah. That was a really cool game, too.
Fantastic game. I actually did Platinum Trophy that one.
Wow. Okay. But before we dive into the games here, let me just finish my...
I'll forget.
Okay, go ahead.
You guys are crazy to play horror games. Do you know what Dead Space is?
Yes.
Okay. It took me a year to beat it. I would play one chapter, and I'd be shaking. Because I'd be so scared of these necromorphs coming to get me. And then as soon as I finish the chapter and it saves, I just throw the controller and walk away. And I couldn't even touch the disc for another month. I don't know. Me and horror games, I get all freaked out and then I can't sleep.
I don't usually like horror games, but I played Until Dawn.
You know, I actually can break that for you with my psychology stuff if you want me to. What you have to do is you have to go turn the difficulty all the way up, run into the worst thing that you can find with no weapon, and just watch what they do with you with all of your logic goggles on and be like, oh, it's not that bad. They just want me to jump. Because the anticipation of the fear is worse than the actual experience of your little avatar getting their head ripped off.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Well, there you go.
Wow. No, that's a great point, because it's a similar concept in horror movies, because if you turn the music off, they're not scary at all. And most of the jump scares don't actually make you jump. And a lot of that has to do with the anticipation before the jump scare.
Yeah, the more senses that you have engaged in a phenomenon, the stronger the response could potentially be. Right. So if I'm just looking at something, but there's no sound, there's no touch sensation, I'm not tasting, you know, the sweat as I'm running away from something.
Sure.
You know, all of those different things combine to create the experience. So if you shut off all of them except for one, it makes it a weaker reaction.
Right. Right. Yeah. It makes perfect sense.
I'm still Marcus, you're shaking. You're skeptical. Okay. Well, I love Resident Evil. I can't believe I didn't mention Resident Evil at all during any of this, but, you know, as far out as those games are or were in the 5 and 6 era, like I really enjoyed 7 with the first person and going back to the creepy house and the deranged family. Oh, go ahead, Marcus.
I was just going to say, I remember playing the first one on the PlayStation. I remember it. And the dogs coming after you, just that moment of being scared because it scared the crap out of you is unbelievable. It's a good feeling because you know it's coming and it was new. But I think Dead Space for me was the first time since Resident Evil 1 that I was actually scared of playing a game. Now there's games like Outlast.
Yeah, Outlast is really scary. I don't typically play horror games. I played Until Dawn, but I don't usually play horror games like that. I watched a Let's Play of Resident Evil 7 because that was too much for me. But and I actually don't watch horror movies either, but for that reason. Oh. Although, I know. I know. It's a fault in my character.
No way! I don't watch horror movies.
It must be a Greek thing.
Yeah, it's Greek.
Perhaps.
Let's yeah. Put in the Greeks.
I actually have one very important story that I need to tell you. Okay. So about a month ago, I think, you were talking with Marcus on the podcast, and Marcus decided to call me out and let the world know that I'm playing SWTOR with him, which is fine. I'm so proud of the fact that I'm part of Death Star Troopers. But then he tuned in to the part of me that needs to achieve things. And he said, I haven't beaten the Underlurker. No, I have. He said, I, Marcus, have never beaten the Underlurker, and Dr. SWTOR is part of my team. And I was like, son of a, that makes it sound like I can't beat the Underlurker. So, within a week, I had gotten my raid team that plays on Monday and Thursday, I had gotten them ready to go do the Temple of Sacrifice, which is the operation with the Underlurker. And right. the first night we dragged Marcus into our team, we actually killed the Underlurker. And we just, for some reason, inexplicably got confused by the easier fight right after the Underlurker. But then the next week we went in and we melted the entire operation. So Marcus has now beaten the Underlurker, and I will gladly take full credit for that.
Well, I'm glad you got that off your chest. That'd be bugging me too if there was such a discrepancy about my gaming achievements.
Yep, absolutely. We gotta set that straight. Live on air.
Right. So
facts happen.
In conclusion to my just weekly recap here, Barkus showed me his epic birthday gift for me. He told me he was getting me these before, but they finally came in the mail. The gift is 2 tickets to PAX East. So PAX East, for those of you that don't know, is a gaming convention put on by Penny Arcade and takes place in the Boston Convention Center. It's the giant gaming convention for the Boston or Northeast area. And Marcus and I are going to it. It just so happens to fall on the weekend of my birthday, so the tickets are the perfect gift. I'm super pumped, and I'm sure we'll have more details to come on that, maybe next episode, but definitely going forward.
I definitely want to talk about it because there's so many. The thing I like about a gaming convention and seeing that we have the doc on is there's so many indie games.
Mm-hmm.
They have their big AAA games, and we'll go check out a couple of them. But the best is when you can go to a table like we're sitting at right now, mm-hmm. and they have a 55-inch TV with 2 Xbox controllers, and they say, hey, check out my indie game, and you can buy this on Xbox or the PlayStation Network.
Or Steam or whatever.
Or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it's $10. But then you actually meet the people who make the game, and you could end up loving the game. There was a game a couple years ago that was called Limbo.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a black and white game about this kid who lost something, and every time he messes up, he gets cut in half or he loses his head. But it was a puzzle game, like where you had to like climb a tree or jump over like a saw blade that's just spinning. And it was just such a great game. And it was best $10 I ever spent because I met the guys. And if I didn't meet those guys, I probably wouldn't have played it.
Right. That's cool. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
I can't wait.
I'm super pumped. We're going April 7th. Maybe we'll see some listeners there.
I don't know.
I don't know about that. But anyways, so Marcus, I know you've got a lot that you've done in the past few weeks. let me know what you've been doing.
So last week I thought I mentioned that I got a new shop. So with leaving my old shop, I have a ton or had a ton of stuff I had to get done.
Mm-hmm.
I had crazy deadlines to meet, and we weren't going to meet them. So because of that, I had to work an insane amount of hours. I mean, I don't even know, 80, 85 hours last week, and it was, or the week before, I don't even know. It was just so much that I was drained, and my wife said, you need a break. You just need to sit back and do it and relax. And I was like, I don't need to relax. And she's like, you can't just stay up. So last week I didn't game. Didn't. That's why I didn't go with you last week, Doc.
Oh, okay.
So, and I'll tell you what, going to bed at 11:30 or 12:30, Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, during the week, and getting up at 5:30 in the morning is draining.
Yeah, sure.
I'm not tired at 9:30 at night, but last week I went to bed at 10. I felt, when I woke up, I was like, wow, I feel like a new man. Wow,
what is, hour means a lot.
Wow, this is unbelievable. And, you know, I've listened to the Bad Feeling podcast, and Chuck and Brian, they talk, and Chuck says how he falls asleep at 10 o'clock at night. And I'm like, oh, suck it up. Let's play this game, right?
Yeah.
But last week, it felt so good
to do that.
To do it. So he was right. But then this week's back and
it went out the window.
It went out the window.
Yeah.
So anyway, so last week also too, I did an epoxy finish on my shop floor, which if anybody knows, if you ever go into like a garage or a warehouse and it's like there's a base paint and then there's like little different color speckles all over the floor, that's what I did. Well, each coat, and there was five coats, it takes like 3 hours per coat. So I was there all night doing it. And I roped some people in to help me, but it still sucked. And I'm no painter, so just being able to get it done was worth it.
Right.
And we were at the shop today moving tools around, getting it ready for the electrician to wire. And I chipped up the floor in one spot, beat it up in another, and I was like, oh, whatever. It's just going to get destroyed. But following up the past few weeks, I did set up my PS4 Pro.
Finally.
Yes.
I've only had it for 3 weeks prior to.
Whatever. So it came with, it's the Star Wars, I don't know, what is it?
Battlefront 2 edition?
Yeah, it's got the Imperial logo and the Rebel logo. It's cool. But I'm not, I have the Battlefront 2 and I didn't even open it.
Mm.
No interest in it at all. So then I bought Shadow of the Colossus. Have you ever played that, Doc?
No.
All right.
It got past me.
Okay, so it's a remake from the original PlayStation 2. Yep. And they remade it in 05 for the PlayStation 3. Now they've remade it in 4K for the PlayStation 4.
Right.
So basically it's an open world and you travel around on this horse, which it's the worst controlled horse ever. It's awful.
It's part of the charm.
Well, no, right. It's terrible. I usually just let him follow me and it takes me a little longer to walk because I can't deal with it. So I've beat 2 out of the 16 bosses, Colossuses, whatever they are. They're awesome in every way. The PS4 Pro, it's putting out some wonderful graphics. I mean, it doesn't compare to my PC.
Right.
But for $349 on super duper Newegg special, bringing us back to our past episode, the graphics on that thing are insane.
Right. That's pretty sweet. And plus, Shadow of the Colossus might not be like developed to be played in 4K. So it might not look quite as good as it possibly could be.
I don't know, man.
It might not be maxing it out.
The way the hair moves on some of these Colossuses, it was crazy.
Hmm.
It was almost like Rise of the Tomb Raider or Tomb Raider when it first came out for the PC.
Yeah.
And you had it on max graphics. It was and watching Lara Croft's hair like run through the wind. But I will say this. The PlayStation controller is terrible.
It's not that bad.
It's awful. It's awful. The thumbstick's in the middle of your hand versus the thumbstick, your left stick being in like a normal position, like a natural position.
Yeah.
I'm going to figure it out, but it's terrible.
Yeah, it took me a long time to get used to that after playing Xbox for a long time.
But it is nice to have
a game that has puzzles in it, and it's a different kind of challenge than Star Wars. Star Wars is really, I do a lot of group content, and it takes 8 people to succeed.
Right.
Where this is, it's up to me to beat this one boss. And
by yourself.
By myself. And if I don't do it, I just die and try again.
Right.
Where if we're in an 8-man ops group and we all die, we blame
everyone. The Marauder.
Well, I was going to say the healer, but you beat me to it.
No, you can't. You can't blame the healer if I'm in your group.
Well, you're a really good healer. I can't even say that. So anyway, in Star Wars news, 5.8. No way. We don't edit anything.
Okay, great.
That is live forever. You are with that for life.
No, that's good.
You're a good healer.
All right, you were talking about SWTOR.
5.8.
Yeah.
So we've been waiting for this update for a while. There's been some drastic changes to the game. We'll get into that in a minute. But last week on Death Star Troopers, we went back to the Gods from Machine to get one more run at the bosses before the new boss, which came out on Tuesday this week, just to kind of get us ready for it. So that was fun. And this week, I'm really looking forward to starting the struggle of beating Izaxx the Destroyer. But last night, we did get to see Izaxx. We had a little hiccup. The ops leader was out due to his truck being stuck in Dallas or something like that. I felt bad for him. And then poor one of our guys, he kind of got 18 inches of snow in New Jersey.
Yeesh.
Hashtag Rack Evan. That sucks. He messaged me and said, I got to snow blow my driveway and there's 18 inches of snow. And so he couldn't make it. And we had some trouble finding fill-ins, but one of our guildies and he's on my Sunday night team. He joined us. And then later on, we pulled in Max, which is our guild master, when we were at Nahut because we 7-manned the first 2 bosses. And then we went through the fight. We beat Nahut. We beat Skyva. And then we got to, it was probably like 11:20 when we got to the new area for the new boss.
Like before Izaxx or whatever?
Yep. And we finished at 11:30. And I asked everybody, I said, guys, we've been here. Is everybody okay staying? And everybody said yes. I'm not going to spoil too much, but there's a big puzzle to figure out in the beginning of it. So that probably took us 20 minutes because some of us have seen it already in another way, but it's still having to explain it to, you know, 6 other people who haven't seen it. It's tough.
Right.
So then we finally made it to the boss. We got to see the cutscene. We got to take one pass at him. And we died.
Yeah. Did you last longer than 7 seconds, Marcus?
Yeah. Actually, we made it. Two players made it to the second phase. We got through. We you know, they made it better.
Yeah.
So that was my Star Wars playing. And I'm just gonna do a few highlights from it in a minute. But if this all sounds fun, come with play with me. And now Dr. SWTOR, because you've met him, on the Starforge server. We're in the AIE Guild, and you can find us at AIE-guild.org. Or if you're in-game, do a /C join AIE LFO, which is the Looking for Officer channel in-game. We would love to have you, and I'm sure one of the officers can get you in. So let's see here. They had some changes for guilds and an improved conquest system, which do you conquest, Doc?
There are weeks where I make sure that my main character at least gets a conquest bonus, but the guild that all of my characters, except for my AIE tune is in, is not a conquest guild. So the most points we've ever earned is like 150,000 and nowhere close to the 2 million weekly points that you would need to get on that leaderboard.
Right. All right.
Well, no more leaderboard, though.
Right. So a lot of people are upset about the conquest changes because there's been drastic changes and people are in an uproar. I don't do conquest, so I'm not going to really dive too much into it. There's some companions that are coming back, which I kind of like the way they're doing it because they're class specific, but you have to go through all of their story content in order to get them. So if you have a low level character that's just starting the last two expansions, well, and you don't want to do them all over again, I can understand that you don't want to go back just to get a companion because we have 1,000 of them. A lot of people are excited over this Arcan Romance. He's dead. I killed him on every tune. Like he's you know, he killed HK and I just wasn't okay with that in the story.
Wait, which HK? Aren't there more than
55?
55.
Yeah, he killed HK 55. I was so pissed off. As soon as they gave me the option to kill Arcan, he was dead. I think my Jedi might have saved him, but like punched him in the face. Huh. I don't know. But it happens. Then the only last thing I want to mention is they're doing a special, I don't want to say promotion, but challenge to the players who do the hardest difficulty in the game, in the operations. They're doing a 1 month or ish. In between 5.8 and 5.9, they're doing a challenge for players who defeat Isaacs on veteran difficulty, which there's three levels of difficulty. There's story mode, which is basically normal, I would say.
Yeah.
Veteran mode, which is like hard mode. And then there's just insanity, which is the master mode.
Right.
And they are calling it veteran mode, but it's tuned to master mode.
Oh, okay. And
for this operation, I think veteran mode has become master mode. Like there is no master. So beating Isaacs on veteran is the hardest version of Isaacs.
Okay.
Well, and they did a live stream this past week, and the man, Matt Puvich, I think his name is, he's the operations leader, lead designer. He said that Isaacs in that mode does 130,000 point damage with one melee hit. If he hits you, it hits you for 130K. I mean, that's going to hurt.
I don't know what that means exactly, but that sounds like a lot of health points, hit points.
Yeah.
I think that unless you're a tank and you're gearing specifically to have a high endurance build, that means you're dead if he hits you with his big melee slash. And that's just his regular move.
Right.
Generally, a well-tuned character will have like 126,000, 118,000 health. So if a move does 130 or more, it's meant to be a one shot.
Jeez.
Right. So either way, they're giving you a bunch of different big time rewards. You're going to get a special legacy reward based item, which you can pass to all the characters if you beat Isaacs during this period. And you're getting a few other things, but it's basically bragging rights and a cool something. I don't know if they said what it's going to be, but
I think they should put your team's name in the end credits when you beat the story of the game.
All right. there it is.
I think that'd be cool.
Yeah.
They'll never do that. But, no, you know, I think it should be something that people can see who did it. I think that would be really cool.
Right. And one other thing I want to mention, because it's been bothering me a lot about the game, and I don't have a lot of time to do heroics. I don't have a lot of time to do like daily quests, and they pay out a lot of money. Like you earn a lot of credits to do it, but I don't have a lot of time to do it. So I don't have a lot of credits. And there's some lightsabers on the auction house, which is called the Galactic Trade Network. And there are 100 million credits. There's a lightsaber that I would love to get, but it's 100 million credits. I'll never have that many credits.
Right.
I think the most I ever had was 25.
Million credits?
Million.
Yeah. So does this lightsaber...
Million.
He's putting his pinky to his mouth, folks. So does that lightsaber just look extra cool, or does it actually do more damage?
No, it just looks extra cool.
Oh, okay.
That's basically what the game's about, is looking awesome.
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, that's what every game's about.
So things have spiked. The market is so high and everything costs so much money. So it says, to assist in combating credit inflation, the Galactic Trade Network's tax rate has been increased to 8% from 6%. I don't know how that's going to help inflation. That just means if I sell something to make more money and I don't have any money, they're just going to take more of it. I don't understand the purpose of it.
If they wanted to accomplish that, Marcus, I actually have a solution that I think is pretty smart and intuitive. Can mm-hmm. I share it?
Of course. Feel free.
They should just gate the maximum value that you can sell something in the auction house based on what color icon is on the cartel market item. So platinum, and you could also do it by type of item and type of marker. So a platinum weapon could be gated at 125 million, whereas a platinum armor set could be gated at 90 million, and then a gold armor set could be gated at 50 million. And then silver. So the tax thing, that's not, I don't think about that when I buy something or sell something on the GTN. Like, I sell color crystals as an artifice. So I get like 55,000 credits. So when I get that mail reward and it's like 47,000, it's like, yes, I sold something. It's not like, oh man, I really want my extra 2% from BioWare.
Right.
Of this fake money. So I'm skeptical that that's going to accomplish the goal they put in the patch notes.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how they fix the cost of things. And I think your idea is perfect, but would they implement that?
No, the other way you could do it is just make everything, that you earn double, like they're doing a double experience event right now. If they did a double credit event and make it so people actually have 150 million, then you would say the people just withdraw their items and list them at 300 million. And, you know, that's true, but maybe the ones who are selling stuff and aren't paying too much attention, their stock would get bought up before they realize what BioWare just did.
Right.
But then
that's a dangerous inflation game, though, you know.
Well, of course, because then if
you make money,
buy it for 160, you're gonna sell it for 300.
Right. Yeah, I know it's fake money, so it doesn't actually matter. But philosophically speaking, well, I think that's a slippery slope of inflation.
I'm gonna tell you it's fake money, but people care about the credits they earn.
Sure.
In the game.
Yeah.
Me, I don't care. I spend it.
Right. But yeah, I think that's I'm not sure how the tax would. I'm not an economist or an economy major, but I'm not sure how that would help.
So that's what I've been up to.
So would you like to take a break?
Yes.
All right. We'll be right back. And we're back. So, Doc, I understand that you wanted to share your thoughts on choices or perceived choices in video games.
Yeah. So ever since I was a kid, I've had a really... I've had a real strong attachment to video games and different games at different times. But then when they started having choices, I thought, wow, this is really cool. Because around that time, when I started to understand that these choices are there and I can choose one way and this character will die. If I choose another way, they might live, but then someone else will die. And, you know, choices in video games are always really severe. It's not just like Coke or Pepsi. It's like you die or you die. Right. So you see these really dramatic changes. And then when I was in college, undergrad, I think Heavy Rain came out.
Mm-hmm.
And this podcast, you both were talking about Heavy Rain when I reached out. I already knew Marcus because I was keeping him alive because Marauders really need that in their life. And and I said, I need to get on your podcast because Heavy Rain, like that is like a Beyond SWTOR connection. That is what I'm all about. I'm always preaching that kind of pay attention to your choices. You can't anticipate some of the ripple effects that will happen. Last week I was doing a lecture, you know, 25 psychology students are in the room and I just went off on this tangent about alternate realities and paradoxes and how all the little things that had to happen for me to end up in Florida doing my education, finish my education when I did, and all the little things that had to happen to you for you to end up in this classroom at this university. And then things 20 years ago could have sent one of us on a completely different direction and we never meet. And this lecture could end up being completely different. Or I could be teaching religion, or I could be teaching biology right now.
Right.
I can't do that. Oh, well, thanks, Marcus. Anyway,
I can't see you teaching biology. That's not who you are.
But you know Dr. Swotor in this timeline, Marcus.
Right. Dr. Swotor in the alternate timeline could be super into frogs and just love biology.
I could have, like, learned something different about a gland in a frog, and I enjoyed frogs because Jar Jar Binks was a formative figure in the... Oh, man. I must really have this, this Freudian connection to the Phantom Menace. Anyway,
yeah, that's twice in one podcast.
I know, but okay, just to set the record straight, my favorite Star Wars is, because that's how you say it, would be Star Wars Eye, would be Revenge of the Sith or Empire Strikes Back. Okay. I really love Anakin Skywalker. You know, I'm not trying to get into argument. I love that character because, you know, as a counselor, I like the idea of making really terrible choices and finding a way back and, you know, doing terrible things for the right reason sometimes. And, you know, Mace Windu, kind of a jerk. And, yeah,
I guess he had it coming.
Yeah. Okay. So, choices in video games. That's what I was going to talk about.
Right.
Before I turn this into Mace Windu cast. I just really started to enjoy this idea of, like, there's some mental health stuff going on here because we do things called personality tests, or we have these different instruments that are to identify elements of who a person is, mm-hmm. why they make choices the way they do, why they become passionate and excited by the things that really trigger them. Mm-hmm. And I started researching those really heavily when I started my doctorate program.
Right.
And so over the years that I was in the doctorate program, I had never played an MMORPG before. I never played EverQuest. I never played World of Warcraft. I never mm-hmm. played any of them. But Star Wars was really important to me. A little game called Star Wars The Old Republic launched December of my fourth month in my PhD program. And I thought to myself, that's BioWare. They did Knights of the Old Republic, which is a great game for looking at conversational trees and, you know, your relationship with those side characters, those companions, grows or fizzles out, or like they hate you, but they're still part of your group by the end of the game, depending on how you talk to them.
Right.
And, you know, that's how life is. From my perspective, in a lot of ways, like I can choose to encourage and show empathy and try to connect with people, or I can be all about me and too busy to notice them, and then we never develop that relationship, and you know we're both on that path now.
The thing about Knights of the Old Republic was, for me, Star Wars games were you were in a TIE fighter, the X-wing, or Super Star Wars, or Super Empire for Super Nintendo. Those are the games I remember, but it was never story driven.
Yeah.
And what Knights of the Old Republic did was brought you somewhere that you've never been, and it blew your mind. Excuse me. And I fell in love with it, and that's why still to this day it's my fourth favorite game of all time.
Yeah.
That means a lot.
I was playing that game in my dorm room during my undergrad degree. I would play it repeatedly. You know, I actually didn't have a car at the beginning of my second year of college, and KOTOR 2 came out. I forced my roommate to go take me a Best Buy so I could buy it, and he got in a fender bender on the way back from Best Buy. But I had KOTOR 2, so, you know, everything.
So all was right in the world.
I felt really bad about that.
Was there snow on the ground?
No, I was in Florida. And by the way, I'm in a desert right now. So when you guys are talking about your snow and I'm just like, oh, sand.
Sand. I hate sand, but I hate snow more.
There's rocks too and mountains. Yeah, no. So no, there was no snow. Just terrible drivers and rush hour traffic. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so those were some of the really influential choice-oriented games, KOTOR 1 and 2, and then later in life, for me, Heavy Rain. And even, you know, I really love BioShock, the first one, even though those choices, it's very simple. It's just a moral decision that you make repeatedly throughout the game.
Right.
And I harvested every little sister the entire way through, and still to this day, I've never been a good guy. In would that,
you yes,
would you Marcus
beat the shit out of me with this golf club?
Yeah,
I made a course announcement last week where I used the words "Would you kindly review the textbook and make sure you read my announcements before completing the assignment this week?"
Now, do any of your students get it?
I don't know, but I was talking with my wife about this. If they do get it, then I'm pretty sure I'm good from their end of course evaluation.
That's true.
Because they'll realize. That's a fair assessment. Yeah, but if they don't, then it amounts to just me being personally happy with myself.
No, it just happens to be that you're awesome because you can refer to the things that you like and incorporate it into your job.
Yeah.
Right, which is what my dissertation's all about, is I used SWOTOR. So I started investigating the Myers-Briggs type indicator, and I started writing this gigantic, in the perspective of mental health writing, a gigantic literature review, because I had to convince professional counselors and professors that this is an academic
endeavor.
Right. So I covered all my bases. My literature review ended up being quite substantial, but I got to write sections about the history of video games and technology expanding what video games are able to do. I started writing about Dungeons and Dragons and how we created MUDs in the late 70s, early 80s, which are text-based role-playing games where you use, you know, some of the, I've never done them, but from what I understand, it's like translating what you do table games into something you can do over computers with people far away, similar to how I play SWOTOR with people who are very far away. I've never been in the same room with them, but we call each other by real or created names, and we have some idea what our life situation is like. I consider them my friends. And so it's sort of like technology allows games to evolve. And because of that, now games have gotten to a point where there's some element of choice in nearly every game. And then there's, you know, there's Telltale makes games that's all you do is make right. choices.
The Walking Dead series, right?
You're not jumping over things. You're like, sometimes you do aim, but you know, it's not like aim where you can really miss. You know, they port these right. games over to the iPhone and Androids. And so like, they know you're not going to miss, you just tap it with your finger. And that doesn't cheapen the game at all, because it's still the same choices.
Right.
And I just love that. And the games actually have the potential to be their own personality test. I read a research article once, I forget which authors it was, but probably Nick Yee. He's the person who did the motivation questionnaire for MMORPGs that I used in my dissertation. And he was awesome. I told him what I wanted to do, and he instantly emailed me and said, yeah, do it. And here's everything you need.
So I have a quick question for, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but
oh, go ahead.
Well, for those of you who don't know, and correct me if I'm explaining this wrong, but the, Myers-Briggs indicators, that's a personality test in itself, right?
Yeah.
Is that the one that gives you the four letters that mean certain aspects of your personality?
Yeah, it does. And so there's different ways to look at those letters. So each of those letters means something in comparison to something else.
Right.
So one of the things that people really get hung up on is that if I'm this letter and not the other letter, but I do things like that other letter sometimes. And I would just say, of course you do, because you're a real person. So,
right.
You know, there's actually a continuum And then within that letter, you actually have a strength indicator that shows how far away you are from the other letter.
Oh, okay.
And so one time I actually took this test, and you know, it's not really valid for me because I've studied it and I know how it works, and I can tell by the question which letter I'm having an impact on if I really want to think about it. Mm-hmm. But I actually one time took the MBTI and switched from a thinker to a feeler.
Hmm.
And that is not what I am at all. And I thought about this and I realized that a lot of the cases of people I was trying to help at that time was resulting in me being a lot more compassionate and open to the flexibility of, you know, not just logically experiencing everything all the time. And so about a week later, I took it again. I tried to clear my mind and not have biased answers. I ended up being an INTJ again and everything was okay in the world. But, you know, it's not like a black and white distinction. It's there is pure white and pure black. Like there are E's and there are I's. So that's introversion, you experiencing things internally mm-hmm. as you walk around the external world. And then extroversion is you tend to send your energy out towards other people. You gravitate outside of yourself. But I people do E things and E people do I things. So Marcus, I'm glad I got some laughter out of you. So
yeah, he's like, holy shit, is that me?
Yeah, that is me.
Whenever Marcus ever, or should Marcus ever take a Myers-Briggs indicator, he'll definitely have an E.
Everywhere.
Well, for the first, you know, as your first letter anyway.
Yeah. The other letters though are really interesting. Like you can look at them separately and understand what they mean. But then also the two middle letters paired together mean specific things also.
Mm.
So
in combination.
Right. NTs and NFs, SNs or SFs and STs. Those are like, I forget what we call them. I should have studied up before the podcast, but
that's all right.
Depending on those, it's sort of about how open and warm you are and how logical you are in making decisions versus seeing potential in people versus seeing things just exactly how they are in the present.
Yeah. Evidence-based. Sort of like looking at a resume of somebody and just, you know, having only like their GPA or how many years they've worked as experience and valuing someone on that versus how they actually come off as and how driven they are in the person interview or something like that, sort of.
Yeah. Yeah. So my two letters in the middle are an NT. So I'm going to look at that logically and say like this GPA does not translate into someone who's going to do well in a graduate program for the next 3 years. They haven't showed me whatever it took to make that 2.97 GPA. That's, right. You know, they're not going to do the work to do well in my classes. Right. And so now that's not true. Of course, I believe in my work with people that you can transcend your past and you can make
improve
that.
And
yeah. That so, nature. But you know, then there's people who are more, an SF person for those two middle letters is going to be more warm and more looking at the potential of people and mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, they have a 2.97 now, but you know, during their second year of undergrad, they had 2.6. That means they went up 0.3. They finished strong. And, you know, they're eight years older than they were when they finished undergrad. And I interviewed them and they sound really motivated to do grad school.
Right. Right?
So, Nick, that was an excellent like scenario for me to show how that works.
So,
sure. Thank you.
The center two letters, are there C and D?
No,
I'm pretty sure that that's what I would get for crazy dude. I'm just saying. So, all right. So why and how do you find that the choices matter? So if I have three options to kill somebody, slap them, or how about kill them, hug them, walk away? How does that tell who I am? I could just be immersed in the character that I'm playing, not actually how I would be as me.
Yeah, that's excellent. So the answer to that question is what you do to the non-real characters doesn't tell me what personality you are. The reason why you chose it does. So, right. You know, the first part of your question, I was going to say, oh, Marcus, that's not how it works at all. But then you said, I could just be immersed in the character that I've created. And that tells me quite a bit. So, you know, if you create your characters for an immersion style of play, then that shows me that in terms of the way people play, there's basically 10 or so styles of motivation for playing video games. Most research I've read indicates that. And so immersion is like an umbrella that has three or four different types of play styles in them. One of them is escape. One of them is immersion. One of them is discovering things. So, like, I don't know if you can relate to this, Marcus, but sometimes you do the group finder and you're in a flashpoint and you're going to have a player who doesn't want to kill anything. And they're probably stealth and they know all the little glitches on the wall where you can jump and you can hop over things and not trigger the enemies. And like, they just go and do that. And you're like, man, I'm a healer and I can't jump that well. And we have a marauder in our group. We need to kill everything. And
sorry, continue.
I think I just got the show title.
What
is it?
No, keep going.
No, but so that person is motivated to find all the little tricks in the game, and they're showing that to the other people in their group. And so that's a way for them to really be an individual in the way they play. Now, does that translate into a personality type? That's what my dissertation was trying to discover, is are there certain kinds of players who do that discovery or that shortcut style of play? And is that linked in any way to certain personality types? And I think it is. I'd have to do some more studies because dissertations aren't trying to change the world. They're just trying to find things we don't know. But at the end of my research, I was actually able to create this nice chart that identifies the defining traits for each of the 16 personality types and how they play SWTOR differently. And all of them had at least one category with a statistically significant result.
Did you put it in our show notes?
I didn't because it's a huge chart.
All right.
But if either of you know your personality types, I can like screen grab like that personality type and give those to you.
I have no idea.
I took a test a long time ago. I don't remember what it was. It was I something something J. I don't remember the two middle letters, which are...
Well, so far you're on the right path because INTJ is the best one.
I think it was an INTJ.
I'm just kidding. They're all good. They're just not all like me. So choices really... they're the way for the gamer to sort of put a little bit more of who they are. So when I was growing up, you mentioned Super Star Wars, like the levels where you have to be Luke Skywalker, you're Luke Skywalker. And some levels you get to pick Luke, Han, or Leia. And some levels you don't because Luke is on Dagobah and Han and Leia are doing the Cloud City thing, right? That choice, it's not really showing pieces of a person's personality. It's just the utility of what the game gives you to work with. So games now, you know, now that we have 3D worlds, we have cutscenes, we have conversations and voice dialogue, voice acting, you know, that it really has expanded how all the different parts of ourself that we can sort of blend into our playing the game.
Well, all of my characters are named after family members.
In SWTOR. That's pretty cool.
Every one of them.
Yeah.
And I play those games as if those people would be playing it. And it's funny. I have two of me.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of them. Playing. Well, I guess in a way.
In a light way.
Yeah. And I would say I find myself on one of my characters. It's like the evil one on my right shoulder. And then the other one is like the good guy that, you know, I feel bad for this guy. He's gone through a hard time. I'm going to let him live. And the other guy's like, fuck you. You're going to die.
Right.
You know? Or when a woman says, oh, thank you so much for saving me. Here's my husband's belt. And and the good guy was like, oh, thanks so much. I'll wear it proud. The other side of me says,
I'm going to take this belt. I'm going to sell it on the GTN. I'm going to buy some stims and wig the fuck out. You know what I mean? So
that's a great dialogue.
Exactly. So it's, yeah, it's, I guess I can only immerse myself with people that I know. I'm probably going to make a character about Nick now because it's going to be the SOTOR life of Nick V.
You should, you could chronicle my fuck ups.
Well, no, it would just be awesome. Because I would kill everything in my path.
Yeah.
By clumsiness.
Do they have a character class like that?
Yeah.
Like, no. I know in Fallout you can... No, that'd be cool. But I know in Fallout you can make a... at least Fallout 4, you can make a build where you're super duper stupid. But I forget what the hell the perk is called. But you can take a perk where if you have a really, really high luck, but really low intelligence, you just... like stumble your way through life and get extra experience when you get in any interaction you get. So if you just pick up pick up a pencil off the ground, oh, here's extra experience. You level up super fast just because you're just a lucky idiot.
Right. So you say choices matter.
Mm-hmm.
But at what point does the choice become obvious? Because all the stories end in the same place. Obviously, right. If you kill somebody, that person's dead. But you can start at point A and it ends at point F. And there might be different variations of B, C, and D and E, but you always end up at F.
Well, that's not always the case. Not every game's like that. Like, look at...
Heavy Rain, no.
Right, or Mass Effect 3, there's three different endings. Depending on how you play the game.
Right. And that's the thing, is there is the illusion of choice. Yeah, so...
I guess I didn't mean to catch up. But for me, and I guess this sort of answers your question a little, or goes off of your question, Marcus, I don't like when my choices don't matter. Like, finally, I want it to be masked that my choices really did impact the story, even though most of the time, you're right, they don't. But a big reason why I didn't like Fallout 4 nearly as much as New Vegas is because my choices did not matter at the end of the game. No matter what faction you side with, no matter what choices you pick, who you're an asshole to, who you're nice to, who you save, at the end of the game, you still destroy the, you know, the story's the same.
Spoiler
no matter
alert.
What you do. Yeah.
Yeah.
the story's the same no matter what. And certain people don't like you no matter what. And certain people do like you no matter what you do, even if you tell them to go fuck themselves the whole game. Right. So whereas in New Vegas, there's a big karma system and each individual faction can like you or not like you. And it's really great because every single choice you make or interaction you make matters.
Well, I think also you're defining the choice, the impact of that choice on you in terms of how the game resolves its narrative.
Right.
And I think, and I've been on a couple other podcasts where I've mentioned that, like, in terms of achievements or trophy hunting, that I really am a huge supporter of those. But also, if I do something that I'm proud of, but there's no trophy involved with it, I choose to be proud of that.
Right.
Because I don't need the video game designers and the companies to have complete control over what I decide to enjoy, right? And if getting that trophy or getting this super dark or super light ending that reflects all these nuanced choices, you know, I'm not writing the game. I don't have that kind of power. But I think that the way we make the choices actually does impact our enjoyment, even if we don't get the ending we wanted. We've just been programmed to expect the ending to change along with it because of companies like BioWare and other companies, how their approach to crafting these games. So, you know, don't lose your imagination. You know,
right.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I guess for me, in terms of that one opinion, it was so blatantly obvious with Fallout 4. And if it doesn't make as big of a difference, I don't mind. Like if I know there's two endings and I don't get the one I was trending towards or something like that, or I thought I was, you know, going to get, I won't be upset at a game. Like I think in BioShock there's two endings like that. There's a good ending and a bad ending depending on your choices in the game. But so I played the game and I didn't, you know, I don't remember what I got, but it wasn't so blatantly obvious that it didn't matter what you picked. So I guess if you're, you know, ignorance is bliss, like they say. So if I'm blissfully ignorant that my choices won't matter, and then it lets me enjoy the journey and not focus on the destination so much, sort of.
Yeah. And also, you know, the first time you play a game, that's like the pure experience. Like I mentioned, all the times I've done the Myers-Briggs type indicator, like the first time I did it, you know, even if I get different letters in the future, that's because I'm tampering with the process. I understand the tests now.
Right.
So like for me with Heavy Rain, the first time I played it, I caught the killer, all the four, well, the characters you control all got their ending as if the movie ended well for them. Mm-hmm. I got one side character killed in the process of playing. And so when I think of that game, that's like my ending. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, and I've seen all 17 endings and I've gone to get those trophies and I've made sure, like, dust your fingerprints off. Don't dust your fingerprints off. Get caught in the police station, have no one see you in the police station. And you know, those are not my ending, those are me tampering with the construct that the game designers gave me to play in.
Right
So
but I think that in and of itself can be really fulfilling too, to go through and have your ending, but then also to go get the other endings. It's definitely a big sense of achievement for me to, you know, get a platinum trophy for, or 100% completion for a game, doing all the little nooks and cranny side quests and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to circle back a few minutes because you guys have been talking. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about how, you know, you may, like when you're talking about the game and all that stuff and how you feel when you achieve something, I'll go into work and I'll tell my employee that, holy shit, we just took down the newest boss in this operation.
Yeah.
He's an MMO player, so he gets it. But then you try to explain to somebody that doesn't play these games, and you're like, oh, what'd you do last night? And I was like, well, you know, what's funny is we went to IOCath, and, you know, I give them the story, and they're like, it's not real. And I was like, it's fucking real to me, you know? Yeah. And they don't get it in where – some people choose to play a sports game all the time. That's all they'll play. And they never play an immersive game, even if it's KOTOR or even, you know, I was going to say Sonic the Hedgehog, but I don't see how you can immerse yourself into
Sonic. But or like an Elder Scrolls game or
something
that where,
but all they play is a sports game. So they don't understand the immersion.
Right. And the escapism of going to some other somewhat foreign like universe.
Right.
Well, not just that, but when people say that what we do in games isn't real, if they're not into video games at all, you know, they can see like signing their kid up for Little League baseball or putting them on some kind of, you know, group activity, dance troupe or some kind of art lessons. Mm-hmm. Like those are things that create a tangible product. You can see a real world skill. Mm-hmm. You can see social relationships getting built. And one of the things I do in therapy all the time is try to help parents understand that, you know, if you're not physically talented, you know, yeah, getting involved in a YMCA basketball team can help with your athleticism and put you around your peers. But I also believe that the team building that occurs in MMORPGs, like just the fact that I'm a healer, right? I cannot beat the Underlurker by myself. It's not possible. The math equation going on underneath the coat of Star Wars paint in that game says healer less than Underlurker. I need Marcus to do, you know, 8,000 damage per second for 6 minutes. I need three more people who can also do that alongside Marcus and not stand underneath the red circle that is a sign that a giant rock is going to crush your body. I need tanks to be like, hey, over here, don't kill my healers and don't kill the defenseless marauder that's slashing at your ankles.
And, oh my God.
And I mean, okay. So I married a person who plays a marauder.
Wait. We're going to have to create a marauder drinking game for all the people out there.
Because you said it every time you said it. Start the podcast over and take a shot every time Dr. Swotor says marauder or shits on marauders.
No. I'm just saying that because it's fun to see Marcus stay a part of our psychology talk here.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but
the middle letters of my Myers-Briggs are CD, crazy dude.
Right. So what I'm saying, though, with the team building is we rely on each other, and we, over the weeks of working on that fight, we develop sort of a camaraderie where we expect people to do their job right. When they don't do their job right, some people get really ticked, and other people are like, no, let's keep it together. Keep your head, like, let's stay positive. We got this. It's exactly like a sports team, except we're not running around and sweating. We're sitting in stuffy rooms and sweating and drinking energy drinks and coffee instead of water and Gatorade.
Right.
You know, so the same people who are like, that's not real, are also missing the point from either just a human point of view or a psychological point of view. There's like, I can discuss that with them all day and I'll never feel like I said something stupid. If they can't understand what I'm saying, you know, then maybe I'm not the right person to have that conversation, but I try to help people to become more accepting that, you know, just because you have a list of 10 things that are worth your time and my list of 10 things that are worth my time are different, we don't have to disregard each other. But like the work, you know, Marcus, the work people, like I have to explain how these games work to my colleagues who are all masters or doctorate holders in mental health. And, you know, it's just decades of people growing up not playing video games, and then we were in the background playing video games, and you know, that's how it is.
Well, I can see it. So in my line of work, it's I don't think people really play video games in my line of work.
Not very often. It's not often you come across somebody, at least when I used to work for you. Oh,
you worked for me.
Yeah. I was going to say spoiler alert, but it's not a spoiler alert. I used to work for Marcus.
You learned how to work.
Right. Yeah. I didn't come across many people that, you know, I was like, oh, hey, you play video games too. Usually they're other interests or just like sports or something.
Or outdoors.
Or yeah. Or out camping or something like that.
Just because I have a big beard doesn't mean I hunt.
Right. But it does mean you like craft beer though.
Yeah. I think it comes hand in hand. But I'm finding that the way games are changing now, if we're going to talk choices matter, the developers of games are changing games to where instead of choices matter or playing the game, they're coming out with these microtransactions that makes you pay to win, right? Versus, okay, I'm going to play this game for an hour. And I'm choosing to do that because I want this special super duper lightsaber. But then they turn around and they just sell it because they want the money. I'm trying to figure out how the industry can change so that to keep the microtransactions out or not pay to win, mm-hmm. or make the choices matter or your choice matter to play more to earn what you want. Did that come out right?
I think I get what you're trying to say. You're trying to make it more worthwhile for developers to incorporate choices.
Yes.
Instead of using microtransactions as a cheaper or less creative way to make
extra money. Well, they can make extra money.
It's not really about extra money, though. I sort of see their plight in all this is that games do take more to develop, and the people developing them do need to earn a living. Or else they can't continue saying that that is the job that they do. And so you make a game and you release it. And in order to justify the people who have worked on it and need to maintain the game, it needs to still be generating revenue. So the issue becomes, you know, I talked about how great games are and how they've evolved and become more complex, but with that comes development cost and maintenance. Like we play an MMORPG, Marcus, so that means like things can break. Like you can kill the first two droids and gods from the machine and get an achievement for killing event bosses on Ilum, which is not even the same planet. Someone has to go in and fix that, even though the game is out in the wild and people own it or downloaded it. So, but there's a maintenance cost.
But we pay $15 a month for that.
Right. So the question is, you know, is it just like I understand, like you would think they should be able to pay to fix the, you know, event boss bug with just the subscription fees. And I don't know the whole economics of how SWTOR is doing at all, but I see that we can't look at it like it's a black and white issue, that maybe the solution is to find a gray area that the gamers as consumers feel a little bit more comfortable with. But I don't see that as like an in-game choice. That's like a money management, real life finances kind of choice too. Like if they put a lightsaber on the GTN that does not make you more powerful, it just looks cool. And it right. costs $60 of real money converted into the currency of the cartel market.
There that is equals 250 million credits in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Which is like the equivalent of running Tatooine heroics for like 47 hours straight. So,
yeesh.
I don't even with a 4-person group. So, you end up with, there's nothing in the code of the universe that says Dr. SWTOR has to purchase that lightsaber. And there's nothing in the code of the universe that says BioWare should feel bad because Dr. SWTOR does not feel like he can afford that lightsaber. It's like a novelty item. You know, there's so many cars I can't buy and houses I can't live in. And SWTOR has that in lightsabers and fancy armor suits.
Right.
Armor suits.
Right. Yeah. I think that's well said. I think that lines up pretty precisely with, you know, our general conclusions a few episodes ago about the whole microtransactions thing.
Right.
Where, you know, if it's a cosmetic item, I think it's morally fine.
Yeah.
So I had one question before we wrap things up here. I wanted you, I don't know if this is feasible to do in a, you know, a limited time frame here, but so your dissertation was looking at, and correct me if I'm wrong, was looking at people's personality types versus how they play an MMORPG, specifically SWTOR, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Could you say or perhaps summarize some of your findings as to, or maybe some things, some highlights or things that were outside of what you expected as how maybe certain personality types trended to play or things like that?
Yeah, sure. So what I found is that pretty much no matter what your personality type is, you enjoy customizing your character, which that lines up with a lot of research that's gone on with the psychology of avatar creation and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, we either tend to make characters that are congruent with how we see ourselves or congruent with a type of character we're trying to role play. Like Marcus, you mentioned family members, you play them in line with the kinds of decisions that family member is going to make, right? So you have sort of a headcanon for that character and you stay consistent to that. So that's congruence. Other people may do the complete opposite and create characters that they can be a fantasy version of their character that's not bound by the laws of the United States and not bound by a Jedi code or a moral-based like faith-based code, and they're not like that at all in the real world. But in SWTOR, everyone that has that dark side choice gets a lightsaber through their face. And, you know, that's part of the escape of playing. But in general, customizing the character, making them look in a way that lines up with your vision for them, that's like a huge motivating factor for every personality type. And then different kinds of personalities just kind of gravitate around the other 9 motivation types in different capacities. Like certain ones really enjoy solo content and certain ones enjoy group content and the social variables involved in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I found out that whereas the real world is generally like a 50-50 split between people classified in the extroversion and introversion categories.
Yep.
SWTOR is more like 75 to 25. You know, that there are extroverted people that play. Like and Marcus. They right. And so I think that, I mean, I have one of my PowerPoints for this open next to me. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, I'm just going to take a couple and share highlights. And I put the INTJ in the Google Doc notes for this episode so you can see my personality type and what the stats showed. Remember also that this study was done during 4.0. So Knights of the Fallen Empire had not happened yet. And we still felt pretty hopeful that, you know, Temple of Sacrifice and group content was going to continue. SWTOR completely changed for about 2 years and now is back to engaging in group content. So if you do a study during that 2 year period or even right now, you could end up with different stats. And I'd be very fascinated to do that if I had the kind of time that it would take to like redo my study. But anyway, so for an ENFJ, that's a extroverted, intuitive, feeling and judgment-oriented lifestyle individual. Mm-hmm. The four highlights I put on my chart for them is they do enjoy story, which is a solo activity. Right. They are highly motivated to discover things within the game and know how things work in a way that's higher than people who are not motivated by that. Mm-hmm. They tend to value relationships with other gamers. And maybe, you know, enjoy participating in guilds and get to know people that they're playing with. Whereas like other people would just do group finder. Like I just need three people with a pulse and I'll do my group content without getting to know them. You're just my DPS. You're just my tank. You're just my healer. So these people like to engage with people on a deeper level when they form teams and groups. And ENFJs like to tank or heal more than other personality types do in my study.
Hmm. Right. With that, their preference to take or healing, would that have to do with them liking the group content a little more? Because those two characters sort of rely on the other people in their group anyways.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. That could get into them wanting to be important for utility and the chance for success. Whereas a DPS person, you know, they like to kill things and you certainly need them in the group. The types of things you have to understand about the fights is a little bit different.
Right.
When you're just focused on DPS only. And that's absolutely fine. But ENFJ people tend to fill in the gaps of, you know, the people who sort of have to know things so you don't get other people killed. Whereas a DPS needs to know the fight just so that they do not get themselves killed.
Right.
You know, you could pull threat on the boss and get other people killed if you're a DPS. So, you know, I'm trying at this part of the conversation to be really fair to all three roles, because the Holy Trinity of MMO gaming is actually a fascinating team construct from a mental health perspective. Like I would love to just do an episode all about that
sometime. We should do that sometime.
Yeah. Sure. But so that's one example. So the ENFJ is a NF personality style. So that's a person that is going to be more about, you know, the logic of things, like the potential for things, I should say, and like seeing how things can grow and develop.
Hmm.
Right. So, but with an extroverted coat.
Right. 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 Right.
Perfect.
Well, thank you. That was fascinating. I'd love to have you on. Definitely have you on again.
I'd love to also.
Continue to discuss different psychological aspects of how we play games through various lenses.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's a couple other angles I could take it. So just, let me know what you're thinking, and I'll let you know if I know stuff about it.
I'm sure you do.
I'm sure you do as well. Excellent. Well, thank you for coming on. We appreciate having you.
Holy shit. We did this for an hour and a half.
Awesome.
I told you, I talk.
Well, we all do.
That's true.
What are you guys talking about in here?
Find out next episode of Working Class Nerds.
Hi, I'm Marcus.
And I'm Nick.
And we are fucking morons.
We're the morons that are going to try to be just a little bit smarter this week. I don't know why I got my Barry Manilow
voice. We need
voice.
To turn up the volume. Pump.
That's gain.
Oh, pump the jam.
Pump it up.
Pump it up.
Got that feeling. It. Bump it.
Pump it up. Pump it up. Pump it up. Pump it up. See, that's plenty loud.
Perfect. Crank that shit up.
No.
Crank it to